Well, we only got one drive of the actual starting offense, but considering that it's August and we actually got one drive of starting offense and then actually got to see real football, I don't think I can complain right now. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on arrowheadaddict.com and on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and on today's show, we're talking about mostly real football. We're going to recap the Chiefs-Seahawks game. I'm going to go through some of the highlights that I've seen there, the best takeaways, a few overreactions that I'm excited to share, a word of caution, a confession, anything else that pops along the way, anything from the game. Plus, I got a lot of listener takeaways from you over on Twitter, at JB Briscoe. You can always get in touch with me there. Got a lot of your takeaways from the games, things that you saw and felt good or bad about. Plus, I'm going to give you the unit that I feel best and worst about coming out of this game, because I think one really shined and one really was a dud in this game. So all that and much more on this first post-game edition of the show of 2016. Seattle Seahawks 17, Kansas City Chiefs 16, and a final score that does not tell the story of this game. If you're a longtime listener to this show, you'll know that the format of how I've talked about games and post-game shows has changed over the last couple of years, but today I am going very much beginning to end, at least through the first half, and going in order of the drives that happened, because in this case, the most important things, as a rarity, the most important things were the things that happened right at the beginning of the game. Let's take a look then at the first team offense and what actually came from the one group of people that we know we're going to see 16 games this year, led by Alex Smith. Started off, Nile Davis had a really nice return that was helped out by a face mask. The Chiefs had a very short field to work down, and they did, in fact, work down it for the first touchdown of the game and the only touchdown until time ran out. But the first two plays I thought was kind of interesting. Demetrius Harris and Ross Travis, both of them caught passes. A nice run for Spencer Ware that was extremely well blocked. Then Ware got a couple more yards for a first down. Then the Chiefs offense stalled out around the 20. A couple of just non-plays, and then a high snap to Alex Smith there. Then it was 3rd and 9 of the 21, and I always think it's interesting to see how teams behave in 3rd and long in preseason and regular season and postseason. 3rd and 9 of the 21, Alex Smith had time, and he actually had a couple of guys that had a little bit of space, but later on he said there was some traffic that was making it hard to see the guys that were open. So he threw down a heck of a pump fake, rolled to his left, and then hit Jeremy Maclin down the sidelines to get to the 1 yard line. Then there was a penalty on the Seahawks, and Spencer Ware rolled it in for the touchdown. 7-0 Chiefs on that first drive. The reason I think 3rd and long is always interesting, especially in the red zone, is because if you are in a game where you think every point is absolutely precious, which I actually think is flawed logic to lead to settling for field goals, you don't have to try to air it out on 3rd and 9. You can do something. You can still throw the ball, but if you want to do it more conservatively and to ensure that you don't end up losing significant yards to get a longer field goal or turning the ball over down in the red zone, you can play it a little bit more conservative. This is obviously a preseason game where I don't think the Chiefs were in any way thinking about just trying to get out of there with 3 points against the Seahawks defense. That's not the mindset in a preseason game. But to see Smith instinctively have a couple of shorter options that were open and were a little bit, apparently he had a little bit of a hard time finding, foregoing those safer options and then throwing down a really strong Ben Roethlisberger-esque pump fake, then rolling out to his left and zipping a ball down the sideline to Jeremy Maclin, in a very difficult throw that frankly isn't going to work, I would even say the majority of the time. I think that is a throw that is successful the minority of the time. I like seeing that is the development of Alex Smith's instinct. I think we saw that at the end of last season also, where he was not so risk averse, but not in a way where it always felt like the ball was in danger whenever it was in Alex Smith's hand. I would have rather have seen him hit, I can't remember who it was, I think Travis Kelce might have been open across the middle, and there was someone literally wide open in the end zone on that play that Smith never saw. I would rather have Smith take the easy and successful throw whenever that's an option, but I would rather have him take a shot that's a little bit riskier as opposed to a check down that's definitely not going to work with zero upside whatsoever. So there's your weekly update for how I feel about Alex Smith. One more first drive takeaway I had came from the ground game. Spencer Ware getting every carry on that first drive I thought was interesting. Turkhendrick West did not see the field, and that's going to be one of the things I'm going to talk about more later on, but just something to keep in mind there. The first team defense, I think we also saw one thing that is something we can actually take kind of seriously going forward. Steven Nelson got picked on twice in a row right out of the gate, and it worked for Seattle. Philip Gaines did not play because he's still recovering from his knee injury. He is practicing, but he didn't play in the game, which is fine with me. But Nelson struggled, and I'm a little bit concerned about Steven Nelson becoming the next guy that gets picked on consistently by good quarterbacks. It seems like he's the favorite to lock down the slot corner spot, and I hope he does do that. I hope he does it with cause, because he was not ready last year. In fact, in the second half of the season, it was the first time he even got on the field. I want him to lock down the slot spot so Philip Gaines can be the outside guy. Kavari Russell is a total unknown right now, the rookie from Notre Dame. I want Steven Nelson to steal that, or to lock up, preferably, to completely lock up that slot position. But this game was did not instill me with any confidence. So, frankly, though, the first team defense was really not good across the board, with the exception of Marcus Peters. It was all very sloppy, and the run defense has no excuse. The defense does need to be prepared to play without Justin Houston, at least for a few weeks. And Tom Bahaly is going to hit a wall someday. Neither of those guys were in the game here. The pass rush has a little bit of an excuse because of those guys being missed. And Eric Berry is a great help in the run defense, but what Eric Berry does in the run game is he makes gains that would go for 10 yards get stopped after 5 yards. He's not stopping 5-yard gains at the line of scrimmage. And with Derek Johnson and the amount of power on the defensive line that first drive, I can't even fathom how the run defense would be a problem. But that's my largest concern from the starting defense in this game, is that Dontari Poe got double-teamed, and the Seahawks ran it right up the middle, and it worked for nice gashes of yards. That's my biggest concern there. We'll talk about Chris Jones a little bit later, I'm sure. He had a nice game throughout the rest of the game, but for that starting defense, that was a concern for me. And the pass rush had a couple of pressures that still weren't superb. And I know the Chiefs and Bob Sutton weren't doing anything scheme-wise to get into the quarterback's head. And I actually think this makes another interesting thing about preseason games. I think you can basically take preseason games generally as just talent versus talent. In these first games, I believe the teams aren't even scouting each other as they do for, obviously, every regular season game, and I believe preseason games from here on out. You can basically take preseason, the first week of preseason games, and say, all right, this is how this game would play out if we removed coaches, if we removed the scouting and the coaching from the scenario. And the Seahawks and the Chiefs both have really good coaching staffs. I think the Chiefs overall, with Reed and Nagy and Childress on the offensive side of the ball and Bob Sutton on defense and Dave Taub on special teams, I think the Chiefs have one of the best coaching staffs in football. So I'm not absolutely panicking, because everyone is also playing this very vanilla. Bob Sutton's not going to show his most heady blitz package in a game that means absolutely nothing, especially in the first drive, the only time you're getting reps with the first team. I'm not in a panic mode, but the run defense, I think, is something that it should be able, because it is talent versus talent. The run game should have held up. The run defense should have held up better there than it actually did. Second team offense comes out. Spencer Ware gets the Chiefs some breathing room away from the goal line after Marcus Peters' interception. And I guess I should back up. The defense was bad, but it didn't matter because Marcus Peters did Marcus Peters things and picked off the ball at the 1-yard line. He is so good. He was behind the receiver and crossed him up right at the pylon as Russell Wilson tried to squeeze the ball in, and then he did a dance. He's in midseason form. And he was out of position there, and the throw was not great. It was a little bit late and a little bit behind. If it's a perfect throw, it's probably a touchdown. But the timing and the spot of the ball and Peters getting beat and recovering was the perfect cocktail there for Marcus Peters to end up getting the ball back for the Chiefs. So Nick Foles comes in. As I said, Ware gets the Chiefs in breathing room away from the goal line. Foles goes to Tyreek Hill twice early. One of them was caught, one of them wasn't. And one thing that was interesting, they mentioned this on the broadcast as it was happening, Nick Foles tried to audible a few plays later, and Andy Reid called a timeout before the play got off, which is frustrating. Andy Reid also in midseason form already, calling timeouts in the first quarter. But the fact that Nick Foles was comfortable going to an audible in his first drive as a Chief after being on the roster for a week is a mildly interesting footnote, but I digress. There was a high pass for Demetrius Harris that was a pretty well-spotted pass from Foles, but Harris couldn't hold on to it after getting hit, so the Chiefs punted it back. And one thing from Real MN Chiefs fan on Twitter, Seth Kaiser, said, the most interesting part of that drive was how easily Hill shook Sherman at the line of scrimmage. quick separation and a better throw there, a better throw there would have been a big play, I think, for the Chiefs. Tyreek Hill's speed has been well documented. Talking about he's one of the fastest guys in football right now, and he, you know, he just played his first preseason game. But I missed that the first time I watched it through, that Seth pointed out, that Tyreek Hill separated from one of the best corners in football very easily at the line of scrimmage, as easily as you can, because of his quickness and the way that he gets off the line. I think that is something we're going to see from Tyreek Hill. Hill is going to get separation and then extend to separation because of just how fast he is. Back on defense, Dee Ford struggled, man, and this is going to be a theme throughout the show, but he is not a run stopper. He can't set the edge, and those are both understatements. He got run around, and then Trayvon Boykin and the Seahawks, so Russell Wilson was out, obviously, and Boykin and the Seahawks came up with a couple of small plays, but a flag moved them back, and they settled for a field goal. Matt Verderam on Twitter said that Dee Ford was bailed out by that flag. He got sucked in about 20 yards to the wrong side, and he once again got run around. He concerns me, and that's going to be to tease my overreaction a little bit. My overreaction from this game on the defensive side is going to be partially about Dee Ford. Back on offense, Sarkandrick West in the game had a really nice run, and this running game is the other overreaction I'm going to have there. I've teased them both, and I will get to those things very soon. Foles came in again, got hit a couple of times. The Chiefs settled for a field goal after going 64 yards in 9 plays, including a miss to Tyreek Hill in the back of the end zone. And the Chiefs hit the field goal. Cairo Santos hits the field goal. Defense then comes back in, forces a 3-and-out. Frankie Hammond Jr. has a nice punt return, getting some reps, although Hill got the majority of the punt return reps, or at least the first punt return reps, I should say. Then on offense, Tyler Bray came in and had a couple of immediate poor choices and poor throws. Then he hit Rod Streeter on the sidelines, and Streeter made a stupendous catch. And Tyler Bray looked like he barely had to step into it. And then on the next play, Bray tossed a bomb like 40 yards to Streeter down the sidelines in the into the end zone. But it looked like Streeter pulled up on the route a little too soon. It was overshot. But man, I know Tyler Bray has flaws, but I understand after watching him just kind of lean back and flick out a 40-yard bomb, I understand why the Chiefs have kept him around this long to see if they can develop the rest of him, because his arm is crazy. Santos finished off the drive with a 49-yard field goal and made it by about a mile. It was 13-3 Chiefs at that point. Then back on defense, the defense got some pressure on the first play, and Seattle punted it back. Tyreek Hill fielded the punt, and it looked like a total lost cause. But he cut it back and forth a couple times, and eventually, and that return was not that important. But eventually, those cutbacks, with the quickness that he shows and the speed that he has, if once he gets any gap at all in the defense, he's going to break some of those and take them back the whole way. The biggest thing that we don't know about Tyreek Hill still as a punt returner is, can he break tackles? That was a problem that we saw with Dexter McCluster all the time. Is he had that quickness, he had that speed, but he was not a hard man to tackle most of the time. He had a couple of times whenever he would run through a guy or take a hit and stay up, and we would see a spark. And that's what you have to be able to be as a punt returner. You have to be able to take a hit and then still use your quickness and speed to take it back. You're very rarely going to go back the whole way completely untouched. That's still the biggest question mark I have with Tyreek Hill. We haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen him a chance to yet. Offense didn't get much of anything done except for Bray almost threw a pick. Chiefs punted back. And the defense gave up 49 yards on 10 plays, but ultimately stopped the Seahawks on 4th-and-1 for turnover on downs. Chiefs get the ball back. Can't do anything more with the halftime. Boop! Halftime, and I'm going to stop doing play-by-play now because the second half was much less interesting. All right, now you have the context of the first half. We can start to look at the takeaways here. First of all, 10 Chiefs caught a pass in this game. DeAnthony Thomas had the most receptions and the most yards. 3 receptions for 46 yards with a long of 23 yards. Caught all 3 of his targets. I think that's notable just because DeAnthony Thomas was getting work early in the game more than I thought he was going to. And that's about it. But I think that's a little bit relevant. The Chiefs haven't completely given up on DeAnthony Thomas. That's a bullet point. Another bullet point, DeMarcus Robinson, the rookie out of Florida, only got 7 snaps in this game. And that surprises me because what are you waiting for here? Guys who caught passes, Shontavious Jones got a target. Nile Davis got a target. Kashif Moore, Darren Reeves, guys who are not going to be catching meaningful passes for the Chiefs. I think we hope DeMarcus Robinson's around for a little while. Only getting 7 snaps is pretty interesting. Don't know why that is just yet. Tres Paley reported today, Monday, as I record this show, that Tyler Bray has a chip fracture in his spine, but trainer Rick Burkholder has also now said that Bray should be fine, though there is no timetable on his return. Sticking with quarterbacks, Aaron Murray had a really nice timing throw to Mike Williams when he started his day. He hit De'Ron Brown on a slant that Brown stretched into a nice gain. And then later, Murray got lit up and delivered a should-be touchdown pass to Ross Travis, the tight end. But Travis dropped it. There was a penalty on Jerod Pugsley anyway, but it was a good job by Murray. Those guys being coupled together here. Now I want to talk about this idea of the Chiefs sending a guy to a mystery IR. I was talking on Twitter to Michael Dewey today. He was talking about how maybe this is the out for the Chiefs to put Tyler Bray on the mystery IR with this back injury. And it's vague enough where you could sell that he's out for the year, whatever. I don't see that happening here, and I'm sticking to my guns of Bray and Foles being the two guys behind Alex Smith on this team and Hogan getting sent to the IR. It was nice to see Aaron Murray make a couple of nice plays, but the Chiefs have invested in Tyler Bray and more recently by naming him the number two guy before Foles got here, and I don't think they wanted him to be the number two guy. That's why they brought in Nick Foles, but he's the best of the young guys right now. Kevin Hogan was never meant to play this season. That was never in the cards. In fact, as I think about it more, I think the Chiefs might have been bringing in Hogan for the IR this year anyway, and then still be going Smith, Bray, Murray, which is something I didn't think about at draft time. Now I think it's Smith, Foles, Bray. If Bray is not truly injured, I don't see the Chiefs putting him on the injured reserve this year. I think they are trying to get him as many snaps as possible, as much experience as possible in the preseason, as much experience as possible in practice. We're going to have to know about Tyler Bray pretty soon. He can't always be the guy with the giant arm who you can't trust in a game. The Chiefs are finding out about Tyler Bray this year, in my humble opinion. Last pre-overreaction offensive notes. The offensive line looked really good. The right side of the line got pushed in that first team offense. The line looked pretty good all day long, especially those guys at the top. I'm really excited about this offensive line still. One defensive note that's not an overreaction. The defensive line also was not particularly sharp, but I am dissuaded. This is not something that I will take an overreaction on. There is so much talent there, and I believe in the coaching there. The defensive line is going to be a strength of this team. It's going to be one of the strongest defensive lines in football. They need to figure out what happened in that run game, and maybe other teams take note of what happened whenever the Seahawks double-teamed Dontari Poe and then ran right past him. That's something that smart, good teams will take note of. But I think the Chiefs will be able to compensate for whatever any other offensive line might be able to throw at them, because this defensive line is super talented. Is the sky falling? Is the sky clearing? Are there clouds? Are there silver linings? Let me give you my three biggest real overreactions from this game. It ended up having one from the offensive side, one from the defensive side, and one special team overreaction from this game. Overreactions that I genuinely believe in, and I think are interesting conversation starters for the rest of this preseason leading into the season that actually matters. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball with the run game and Spencer Ware. Nile Davis, Darren Reeves, Spencer Ware, and Charkandrick West ran for a combined 131 yards on 27 attempts in this game, 4.85 yards per attempt. That is Nile Davis, Darren Reeves, Spencer Ware, and Charkandrick West. Okay, it's a preseason game, but those four names I think are important here, because in the order of Spencer Ware, Charkandrick West, Darren Reeves, and Nile Davis, those are the Chiefs' number 2, 3, 4, and 5 running backs right now. Those four guys could be the number 1 through 4 for almost any team in football. Any team that doesn't have a star established. Any team that is a little bit running back needy. So many teams that only have one guy that they have any faith in would trade their running back roster just for the guys currently behind Jamaal Charles. And this offensive line, as I just mentioned, is only getting better and better. Mitchell Schwartz is going to make it a whole lot easier to run around the right side of this offensive line off tackle. This run game is only going to get better, and it is so deep. There is so much talent, and I've liked Darren Reeves for a while. I remember him having a couple of blips on the radar in Carolina and running really, really well. I like him on this team. I don't know if he's going to be able to fit in anywhere. He certainly won't if Nile Davis makes this team as a kick returner, which I hope that Tyreek Hill is able to take the kick returner job, just because I would rather see Darren Reeves than Nile Davis as a running back. But with Spencer Ware and Charkandrick West, I don't know, and obviously behind Jamaal Charles, I don't know where any of those other guys fit, and it might not matter. If the Chiefs could get Darren Reeves back on the practice squad, if that's still an option, which I'm not even sure about, that's bad reporting by me, then I hope they can make that happen. Because there is so much talent in this running game, and the coaching has been phenomenal. The roster building with the running back spot has been phenomenal. The Chiefs are now paying reasonable money to Charles, Ware, and West. Those three guys are all going to get significant carries this year. And, man, I just hope that Andy Reid uses them all appropriately. Because Jamaal Charles, we just had almost an entire season without him, and the run game was very good. I think last year we could all agree that Charkendrick West was the star out of the backfield. I think this year that's going to change. That Charles will be the number one guy, and that Charles will get something like 50% of the carries for this team this year. Super loose ballpark, don't quote me on that. But 50 to 60% of the carries this year maybe go to Jamaal Charles. Then I think the next 30% are going to Spencer Ware. And maybe it's even less. So to give 50 to Charles, give 30 to Ware, and 20 to Charkendrick West, that might not even be enough to separate Ware and West. I think Spencer Ware is the different kind of guy in that backfield, in a way similar to how I think Kevin Hogan and Aaron Murray are redundant as a player. They're here to do similar things. I think that Jamaal Charles and Charkendrick West are a little bit redundant. I think Charkendrick West, we called him last year a little bit of a poor man's Jamaal Charles in his run style, and there are differences, but I think that's a reasonable comparison and a compliment, frankly, to Charkendrick West, a guy who was simply a nobody, the third guy on a roster behind Nile Davis for too long. Being a poor man's Jamaal Charles is not a diss, but I don't know what situations that I would bring Charkendrick West into the game in place of Jamaal Charles, except for maybe a third down situation where Charles needs a break for some reason, or if Charles is banged up. I would rather have Charles do what West can do in a case where they're both options. However, if Spencer Ware gets a ton of goal line carries this year, if Spencer Ware gets a lot of second and five, third and one, fourth and one, or just, I guess, like red zone carries this year, I will not be pissed at that at all. I will welcome that. And so will Jamaal Charles. Charles, for as great as he is hitting an age with running backs where it gets harder to stay healthy. It gets harder to keep your knees under you. Especially a guy that now with Jamaal Charles that has had two major knee injuries and major knee reconstruction. And I actually think it's funny to look back on the fact that the Chiefs have been trying to find this guy for so long with Jamaal Charles. I mean, they went and got Thomas Jones, the Chiefs went and got Peyton Hillis, and those guys simply couldn't run the football anymore. Well, now they had the guy on the roster, they have the guy on the roster now, and Spencer Ware. He's better than Peyton Hillis, he's better than what we got with Thomas Jones. He's more versatile than either of those guys, and he is more sprightly at this point, to put it lightly, and with, you know, the amount of miles on those guys' legs compared to Spencer Ware's. I think Spencer Ware is going to be a big part of this run game, and the fact that Charkendrick West is a total luxury third option here, I think is incredible, because I think he's a really good running back. And then even Darren Reeves, watching Darren Reeves in this preseason game reminded me of watching Spencer Ware last year's preseason, going, this guy should have a job. This is a good running back. What is he doing as the fourth guy on this roster? If something happens to Spencer Ware, or something happens to anyone, and they need another back to come in and get some carries, I would trust Darren Reeves with the ball. I just think that this Chiefs run game is going to be truly something special this year, and it might not be in a way where it will ever get any national attention or anything, or even a lot of attention around here, perhaps, because I don't see Jamaal Charles having a monster season. I don't see Spencer Ware having a monster yardage season. But I see those guys combining for a really tremendous yards per carry average. I would say the best in the league is what I'm expecting from this run game right now. Because not only are there three talented running backs, because there's a rotation able to be had here, those are going to be guys who stay fresher than a guy like Le'Veon Bell or Adrian Peterson, or even Jamaal Charles. Guys who have really amazing yards per carry averages, but get worn down throughout a season. Whenever you're splitting up reps between West, Ware, and Charles, none of them are feeling all of those carries at the end of the year. So I am very excited for this run game. That's my offensive overreaction from this game. On the defensive side of the ball, I am worried about D Ford. And I'm a little bit worried about the pass rush. It's been very quiet from Justin Houston this offseason. I don't know why we are kind of accepting that the timeline is optimistic with Justin Houston right now. We haven't heard anything negative, I suppose, and we're sort of taking no news as good news. I am not so convinced that no news is good news here. I think Justin Houston's going to end up missing some games this year, and that worries me because Tom Bahali, who does not need to be practicing or need to be in the preseason, but Tom Bahali needs to be healthy, especially with opposite him currently is a guy in Dee Ford who I have really no faith in at all right now. He cannot stop the run. And this happens with really good pass rushers. If you run right at a lot of really, really talented quarterback pressurers, guys who are there to get the quarterback, running the ball right at them usually takes them out of their element, and those guys usually aren't as strong at stopping the run. Well, Dee Ford is not even pressuring the quarterback that well. One thing he really struggles in is not only setting the edge in the run game, but also turning a corner in the pass rush. It feels like all the time he's about 6 yards down the field headed towards the quarterback, and if he could just make an immediate right turn, he would light him up. That never happens, though, because offensive linemen know how this works. Playing, and I don't know if this is something that is really obvious for everyone who's ever watched football, if you had to play at any given point, I'm not really sure, so I'm going to reference my very, very average high school football career. As an offensive lineman, if you can shuffle the defensive end, the pass rusher, the outside linebacker, if you can get them locked up and just shuffle them back to behind the quarterback, where they are 5 yards behind the quarterback and 10 yards from the line of scrimmage, you have done your job. And if it, as a defensive end, if you give up that kind of a gap and you're just going straight down the field and don't make any sort of actual angle, not only is that opening huge running lanes for running backs whenever they decide to switch it up, you are not going to get to the quarterback at all whatsoever. And I can't remember who this is, but there was a guy, I think it was on the Eagles a few years ago, I think both Eagles defensive ends would line up really wide and set up at incredible angles and incredibly low and be down in a four-point stance, and they would just be at like 35 degree angles blasting into the tackles, and they would be caving the tackles in, making the pocket smaller and backing up the lineman back into the quarterback. Dee Ford never has that problem because he's going straight down the field. And until he turns those corners, until he can get a better angle, it is complete. He's basically completely worthless as a pass rusher. And that's a shame because he does get off the line fast. He does beat linemen off of the line very frequently, but he's got to get inside more often. And because he's worthless as a pass rusher, being also worthless as a run stopper right now is very, very concerning. So what else can the Chiefs do here? Well, I don't think Daddy Nicholas is the answer, but he had a really nice game last night. The rookie out of Virginia Tech, I believe a sixth-round pick off the top of my head. Jeff Falvert tweeted, Daddy Nicholas had 2 sacks, missed one, and was tackled from behind on one that would have ended the game. By the way, if you missed it, the Chiefs lost the game because of a Hail Mary and a 2-point conversion in the fourth quarter by the Seahawks backups against the Chiefs backups. Daddy Nicholas was held in that last play, and he would have gotten the quarterback there. That just doesn't matter because it's a preseason game, but that's where this comes from. If he would have not been tackled from behind on that last play, and or not been held at least, and would have held up on the other sack, we would have been talking about a 4-sack game from Dottie Nicholas. This is really interesting about Nicholas, if you didn't know this already. Back in April, I was looking back at this stuff yesterday. There were scouting reports out that Nicholas was playing defensive end and even defensive tackle, a 3 technique, at 235 pounds when he was at Virginia Tech. That's a different kind of athlete, man. Like, Justin Houston is listed at about 260 pounds. And you think of him as like a speedy pass rusher, outside linebacker, versatile athlete. Nicholas was at 235 playing D-tackle and defensive end at Virginia Tech. If he will bulk up and move to a more pure pass rusher spot on this Chiefs team, I believe. And whenever that happens, I think we could actually see him getting some meaningful snaps more quickly than I would have thought before this last game. Perhaps this year in obvious passing scenarios, especially if Justin Houston's out for a little bit of time. Also, Desmond Moses is getting runs with the ones at outside linebacker today, Monday, in practice, and Nicholas is getting second and third team reps at outside linebacker today, according to some reports out of camp. The Chiefs want to get Nicholas in the game and as many practice reps as possible, because as he bulks up and gets used to the speed of the NFL, I think he's got some really interesting physical tools. One of the reasons that I think he fell so far in the draft is because his stats were significantly hurt by him playing defensive tackle at 235 pounds at Virginia Tech. It was the best thing for the team at the time, perhaps, but it was not the best thing for Nicholas's stock, for his draft stock. So now the Chiefs getting him as a late-round pick and seeing some of the tools he has, I'm very interested by. Now for the overreaction on special teams. Cairo Santos is going to be a Chiefs and fantasy football legend. He hit a 58-yard field goal with room, a career best. He's gotten stronger. And that's important here, because that was one of the doubts about him as a rookie. Even one of the between him and Ryan Succop, there was question about Santos's leg. 3 for 3 with a 58 yard long today, during the game on Saturday. I'm not even close to today. He draft him in your fantasy football leagues. Praise him as your kicker now. Cairo Santos is headed to the moon. Before we go on to your takes and takeaways from this game from you, the listener, I want to talk about Patreon one more time, as I do every single week. At patreon.com/RTK, that's patreon.com/RTK, you can give a little bit of money to me for this show, support this show financially, and you can do it by $5, $10, $20 a month, just as a donation to help this show be free and be continuing all throughout the season. Or if you'd like to sponsor this show, if you have something that you want to sell and you think listeners of this show are going to be interested in it, you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/RTKshow or tweet me at JB Briscoe on Twitter, and we can direct message, or you can send me an email and I'll give you my email on Twitter. If you want to support this show for $100 a month, or we'll figure out what exactly the price point for that would be. But if you want to just support this show as a listener, $5, $10, or $20 a month, I appreciate that tremendously. And the people whose names I'm about to read right now have been doing it for a long time. Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Steven Smith, given $20 every month. Ty Declare at TyDeclare44 on Twitter in the $10 group, and $5 a month from Josh Beadle. Those people are helping keep this show running for free consistently for you, the listener, and I'm going to keep doing the show through the regular season because of donations from those people, and hopefully from people like you as well. If you can't support the show financially, though, no need to panic. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe and contribute to the show that way, just by being an interactive piece of the show. Give your feedback, your questions, your ideas for the show on there or on the Facebook page I already mentioned. And you can leave reviews on this show for the show on iTunes. You just search Roughing the Kicker on iTunes, leave a review there, rate it. That apparently helps people see the show more easily. And just sharing the show with your friends who are Chiefs fans. I hope that if you're listening to this show as a Chiefs fan, that you think it's valuable for other Chiefs fans to also be tuning in. And the larger the reach of this show, and hopefully eventually the greater the support through things like Patreon, through advertisers, whatever that might be, the more consistently I can do this show, the more frequently I can do this show, and the better I can do this show. So, as always, thank you for your support. You can do it through any of those ways, or you continue to just listen, which I appreciate every single time. I asked you on Twitter after the game, at JB Briscoe, what were your top takeaways from the game? Now I'm going to keep affectionately calling it your takes and takeaways. Here's just about everyone that I got, I think, and then hopefully I'll be able to shine some light on your questions or opinions or whatever. From Lou, Desmond Moses looks better than D. Ford. From Gates Chief on Twitter, Dottie and Moses should replace D. Ford. Talked about D. Ford earlier already, so I won't get redundant there. But and also, I guess, the new reps for Moses and for Nicholas. D. Ford, I mean, this could be the second year in a row that I've said this kind of thing about it, but I think D. Ford, this is it for him. Like, he needs to show something this year, or he's going to be the guy that next year, like, the Ravens are going to sign former first-round pick D. Ford, and then 2 years from then, D. Ford's going to be out of the league. I've already covered my biggest concerns about D. Ford's game, and it's basically everything. It's ability to turn the corner and to set the edge in the run game, and just to play run defense at all. And I don't know... I don't know what's wrong with him, because, I mean, this is one of his big, one of the questions coming out of college is, you know, he's got these physical tools, but can he translate it to the next level? Well, whenever he's playing more talented guys with better, with not only better physical tools, but better technically, the answer's been no, he can't. Now, I don't know if Daddy Nicholas and Desmond Moses can do that either. But to at least have them getting some more reps to where if D. Ford is really struggling in the regular season as well, wherever you can bring those other guys to try to make something else happen, I think that I would at least be completely on board for that, for getting those guys more ready for meaningful regular season snaps, because I also have a lot of questions about Dee Ford. Rodney Green, the defense wasn't too impressive. Seattle's first drive looked too easy. I completely agree with that. And again, it was Marcus Peters making a great play, bailed him out. Marcus Peters won't do that every single drive. Now going into that game with no Tom Bahali, no Tom Bahali, no Justin Houston, no Philip Gaines, no Eric Berry. Those are all incredibly meaningful players. Those guys are, I don't know, four of the six most important guys on that defense, at least, maybe. I understand that that's very different, and Barry will be around, Tomba will be playing, but he scares me the most out of all those guys just because I don't know what he's going to be. And I'm very concerned about Justin Houston not being around. I do have some concerns also now about the defense as a whole. If Philip Gaines comes and plays a really good outside corner and then Steven Nelson plays a really good slot corner, then we're gonna eventually, I think, move on from our defensive concerns. But if the secondary can't step up and Tomba slows down, and Justin Houston doesn't come back, or something is going on with Eric Berry, if any multiple versions of those things happen, if the Chiefs have to overcome two or three of those factors, the defense is going to have a hard time, even though I think the defensive line is going to hit its stride very soon. Austin Hall is the depth of the whole team. And I think this is interesting, and I'll talk about my caution for the team in a little bit. But because you are seeing third and fourth string guys up against other third and fourth string guys. And in fact, I'll go ahead and bring my confession yet, but my word of caution. I do think the Chiefs have a better set of backups than most other teams, but backups versus the backups isn't the most important thing here. We're never going to see full second units versus full second units in real games, if that makes sense. What matters here is how the backups step up with the first team and can hold on the fort, like how Steven Nelson can move to the outside and hold it down against Russell Wilson. And it's hard to judge that in preseason games because that doesn't happen very often. Steven Nelson is the one example I can think of off the top of my head, and maybe Dee Ford. The reps are useful, and you can see some really good things from guys, but it's all a little bit of a facade, I think, I think it's very easy to get very hyped up about generally backup units. Although I do think that the Chiefs do have a very strong team the whole way down the depth chart, and I think whenever we see preseason cuts happening, we're going to have guys that are getting cut by the Chiefs getting picked up by worse teams, which is a good place to be. It's a good sign of the fact that your team actually is rather deep. Keyshawn Brown says, Jones, Nicholas, Travis, and the offensive line shine. Ford and Russell, I need to see more of. Kavari Russell was almost a non-factor here in this game. I have almost no memory of seeing him do anything in this game. And not necessarily in a way wherever he's like, oh, he's locked down the team's number one receiver. It's a preseason game. He's going up against some very fringe competition. So I completely agree. Kavari Russell, I think, is the only guy in that group I haven't talked about quite a bit. Although Travis did have a bad drop. And he can't block anybody. Ross Travis can't block. And that's the tight end position is going to be very interesting for the Chiefs because we know Travis Kelce. We know Demetrius Harris, I think, I think Harris is locked in as the number two guy here. But then James O'Shaughnessy, Ross Travis, our other pass-catching options, Brian Parker can block. So I think the Chiefs are going to have some decisions to make there. I'm not as sold on Ross Travis, but I am with Jones. I am on board with Chris Jones, Daddy Nicholas, the offensive line all shining, and needing to see more from Russell and Ford. Three Gravy Cats on Twitter. Alex Smith is who he was at the end of last season, taking more risks to make big plays. I think that's a great way to put it. And we saw Smith getting more comfortable with that throughout last season, also getting more comfortable in the offense, more comfortable calling for audibles. And I think those things are all coming around the same time. I think there really is a very meaningful aspect of how comfortable is Alex Smith in this system and how comfortable is Andy Reid with Alex Smith. So I do not expect to see Alex Smith regress to be the more conservative guy that we saw 2 years ago, because I think the Chiefs are still moving in that more aggressive direction. I think Alex Smith is taking more risks on purpose to make big plays. So I think that's a great call. Michael Dewey says, cautiously optimistic about our wide receivers. Also, Fulbs has a long ways to go. The Streeter catch is where I get my hope. Mike Williams and DeAnthony Thomas did well too. First with Nick Foles, because I haven't really talked about him very much yet. Foles had roughly a week in the system leading up to this game, and he seemed rusty, but I'm not particularly worried yet. Although there was a clip that I heard over on 8-10 when I was working last weekend of Nick Foles talking about how he's kind of a rhythm quarterback, how he likes to get into a groove. And that concerns me a little bit because this Chiefs offense doesn't move quickly like Chip Kelly's offense did in Philadelphia, wherever Nick Foles was very successful. Also, Nick Foles will not be coming into a game and having gotten really well warmed up in the first quarter. If he comes into a game, it's going to be because Alex Smith got injured at some point, and Nick Foles will have no time to warm up. His first step onto the field is going to be meaningful. So that concerns me about Nick Foles as far as rust and his rhythm, his affinity for being into a rhythm. I'm not worried about Foles yet, though. I do think he's the second-best quarterback on this team. But I hope Tyler Bray is healthy and can challenge him for that very soon. Streeter did a great job continuing his training camp hype. I'm on the board with that. Williams and Nathan Thomas both had flashes, but I'd still be surprised to see either of those guys make the final roster. Although, as I mentioned earlier, I do think it's interesting that D'Anthony Thomas got some early reps. And Mike Williams is so interesting in flashes. In a couple of big moments, a couple of nice grabs, you go, oh, that guy, I want that guy on my team. I mean, he was incredible for that year or two in Tampa Bay. But I think he is so inconsistent right now that I think because guys like Rod Streeter and Tyreek Hill and Chris Conley are all, you know, receiving some hype leading up, although Chris Conley's been awfully quiet. But guys either established like Conley or Wilson that are going to be on the team with hype guys like Streeter and Hill, I think it's going to be really hard for Mike Williams to really get a spot on this roster. From Pat, looks like a new era running back. These guys are good. And then from Grizzly 64, the run game won't just survive without Charles. It'll flourish. Still can't replace him. Just no need to rush back. Completely agree. And again, we can look at just how good the run game was last year. Now look at maybe Darren Reeves being a bigger part of it, or most importantly, Jamaal Charles returning to that backfield. It's just a really, really strong unit here, and I'm completely on board with it. Now for a couple of comments from Arrowhead Addict before the preseason game, but from the last show, I wanted to talk about a little bit. From Killer Doctor 27, first of all, thank you for saying you enjoy the show. Question is, so do you think the offense can surpass the defense this season? With many of the starting defensive players getting older, what are the chances the offense takes a huge step forward and becomes the strength of this team? Personally, I really can't recall a Chiefs team this well-rounded. I agree. After looking at the, I mean, man, and I know I'm buying into the preseason game too much, But with the preseason game in the rear view and thinking about all the stuff we've heard out of training camp and what I know about this team, I do think that the offense is looking at being the strength of this team. That also worries me the most because if the defense does take a step back or two, which I think is actually seeming like it's poised to do, especially without Sean Smith, which I would have franchise tagged Sean Smith to try to prevent all of this, but that's gone in the past now. I do think that the defense has a couple of holes in it that good offenses will take advantage of. And I do think that this offense is going to continue to take strides here. My biggest concern is who's the number two receiver and how does that play into the offense? I mean, Travis Kelce is effectively the second pass catcher, but I'm very, very hopeful about Chris Conley, although I'm also getting a little bit concerned just because he has been very quiet throughout camp. And I want to see that growth from him very soon in the preseason and then hopefully, obviously, the regular season when it actually matters. But I think, and this is an oversimplification, so I'll try to break down the other pieces first. We know what Alex Smith is, and I feel great about it. Jeremy Maclin, great about it. Backfield, feel incredible about it. Tight end group, very solid. Offensive line, very good. What does that leave here for how good the offense can be? It's the wide receivers. What do we not know about the wide receivers? We know Maclin. Don't know about the rest of the guys. Maybe Rod Streeter right now looking like the third best receiver on this team. But you don't want Rod Streeter to be your second guy. With all of that, I think that the chances that the offense is a top five offense ends up being about the same chance that Chris Conley becomes the number two wide receiver here. If Chris Conley becomes a really legitimate number two receiver threat, I think this offense is extremely threatening. If Chris Conley continues to be a fringe guy, I think this offense will be able to work around not having a number two receiver, but it gets a whole lot harder. So I think Chris Conley is the one missing link for this offense going from good to great, and not because Chris Conley has to be great, but because somebody has to be there to take some heat off Jeremy Maclin and the run game. From 4 p.m. on Arrowhead Addict, Foles will push Smith for under $2 million this year. That's a bargain. He's not the future in KC, but there's no demand for Foles other than as a backup somewhere. He's not that good, but I'm personally not a big fan of paying a guy for big money to hold the clipboard, praying he never plays, and knowing if he does play, he's highly unlikely to lead the team anywhere about out of the playoff race. But at $1.75 million, he's probably a better option than anyone who currently has behind Smith now if it ever came to it. I think he's one and done. I agree with Nick Foles. with that take about Nick Foles. I don't really think that Foles is going to be pushing Alex Smith per se. I think that he will, but I do think he will benefit Alex Smith. I think as I talked about last week a little bit, Smith having another veteran in that group, maybe even Foles is a benefactor, or Tyler Bray is a benefactor of having Nick Foles around, where Foles can help with the young guys, where Foles can be a kind of the I mean, backup, obviously, but kind of the backup to Alex Smith in more ways than just on the field, but in the film room, in talking about other defenses and their own offense. Nick Foles is an experienced, not old, but an experienced NFL quarterback mind, not just an experienced quarterback body. So I think that they will benefit with each other. Also, 4PM goes on to say, Fisher risky, you think? He was ranked as the worst right tackle or left tackle in the league since he was drafted, been injured most of the time, and this is the high point of his career last season, going from one of the worst tackles in the league all the way up to the 36th tackle in the league during that second half cupcake run for the Chiefs. And then Dorsey decided it was a good idea to pay him like a top 5 left tackle whenever he can't crack the top 30 on either side. I understand, and I'm standing by the word risky for Eric Fisher, because I understand the concern there. If you think that last season was the peak of Eric Fisher's career, then this contract is going to be a disaster. If you think that last year was an indicator of things to come for Eric Fisher, then this contract is going to look good whenever we look back on it after other guys are getting paid much more than Eric Fisher. Remember, Alex Smith, whenever his monster contract at the time came out, was being paid as a quarterback who was far better than he actually was. Well, since then, other quarterbacks have been paid much more than Alex Smith, and Alex Smith has improved. That's why I think in a lot of ways Eric Fisher is the Alex Smith of left tackles, where we're going to look back and go, oh, well, that was a lot of money at the time, but I get it now. It worked out now, where it was the best option available. When you're not paying Eric Fisher, I'd start to question, well, what are you doing instead? Just like I always, if you're not going to pay Alex Smith, what are you doing instead? It is risky, and it also, and I don't think that Eric Fisher has this phantom injury, and this is something at 4 PM when I talked about on the comment. I don't think Eric Fisher has this actual phantom injury problem. I think he has been injured in ways that have significantly damaged his game. I am not interested in saying, oh, he's got these fake injuries to hide from J.J. Watt. That was absurd last year. It's still absurd. But for all of the concerns about, you know, about him plateau or him hitting his peak last year and plateauing from now on or getting worse from now on, that's legitimate. That is a fair concern. We're operating on a very small sample size of Eric Fisher being very good. I think we got, what, 10 games or so, 10 or 11 games of Eric Fisher at left tackle last season and in those situations being pretty happy with him. Again, I'm telling you, we're going to think about it like Alex Smith's contract. If Alex Smith would have burned out these last couple of years, then we'd be looking back going, man, they paralyzed the franchise. Now we look back and go, man, they got a top 15 quarterback at a price now getting paid at a premium a little bit less than that. So we're going to look at Eric Fisher also. It's either going to be putting the franchise in a really tough place with a really mediocre to bad left tackle, or it's going to be saying we got a nice value on a guy who's an anchor for this team now. And I think it's very interesting and very fair to be concerned about it either way. But I think that's why Eric Fisher and Alex Smith have a lot of parallels there. I'm on board with taking the risk for Eric Fisher because I'm in the other camp. I'm not in the camp of we saw his best last year. I'm in the camp of we saw his potential last year and his potential for continued growth. So that's where I ended up on Eric Fisher. As always, thank you to everyone who tweeted in after the game. Thanks to 4PM and for Killer Doctor on Arrowhead Addict on the comments there. I'm going to try to keep reading those in this last bit of the show throughout the rest of the season. I want your tweets. I want your comments about the show, about the team, questions, everything you might possibly have. I would love to hear those all the time. So thank you for everyone who contributed on this episode. That's going to do it for this episode. On the way out, I want to give you my confession that I promised earlier. I really enjoyed watching the first team offense and defense in this Chiefs-Seahawks game. It was like jumping into a cool pool on a hot summer day. It was just so refreshing. Like, we've been outside for so long in the sweltering heat, and now actual real football was finally there. But the second half was a little bit hard to get through for me. And I think that's a good thing. And if you're in the same boat, I think it's okay. Because we have so much to actually look forward to when real football is here, because we believe we have a good team to watch and to cheer for. We're ready for the real thing. I don't need to get my hope from preseason games anymore this season. I can look ahead to the real thing and say, I'm ready. Bring it on, AFC West. I think we have an actual contender here. And in that case, maybe it'll be like the ice bucket challenge where we'll actually get into the water and then be jolted awake from this dream. But until then, I'm staying optimistic. Thanks for listening, as always. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Bye, Mom.
Sir, but could you drop the bass?